Welcome back to Cool Science Radio. I'm Lynn Ware Peak. My next guest is writer Andrea Rothman. It's not very often you run across someone who, prior to being a fiction writer, was a research scientist at the Rockefeller University in New York, where Andrea studied the sense of smell. You could call her an olfactory scientist. She has released a new book called The DNA of You and Me. It ties into her PhD in neurobiology, again, where she studied the sense of smell. She was awarded 2 grants from the National Institutes of Health to study olfaction, so she knows her subject matter intimately. Crafting her debut, following that age-old adage of write what you know. Andrea Rothman, welcome to Cool Science Radio. Great to have you.
It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
I'm sure many have said to you that, wow, you're really balancing your left and right brain, you know, from starting off as a scientist using that left brain, and now you're moving into a more creative, even writing fiction with that right side of your brain functioning, connecting the two spheres.
Yes. I would say, you know, it's interesting because every people tend to think that the two things are really diametrically opposite things, science and fiction. And actually, I kind of feel like they're both very creative fields where you really have to kind of imagine a lot of stuff that you're not able to see. So like in science, you have to, you know, do experiments and just imagine a whole world out there that exists microscopically. And the same thing applies to fiction. I kind of like, when I write, I really just have to imagine everything from scratch, like what the characters are doing, where they are, what they're saying to each other. And just, it's, so it is. I find that there is a commonality between the two.
That's interesting. You're not the first scientist that we have spoken to that has said that very similar thing, that being in a lab and doing research is very creative. Well, and it's problem solving, which is creative as well. So I'm really curious. And really another connection between the two is studying the olfactory system. It takes us into stories, right? It takes us into stories of our lives. It takes us to our history. A smell can trigger a memory that we have from when we were 8 years old. And so very interesting how those two things are connected. Now you're telling a story in a novel. And I don't know. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah. I mean, the sense of smell, it's probably our most primitive sense. So it does, and it's very emotional. So when you recall things through scents, let's say a scent of fresh bread, something, some event happened in your childhood and it was a dramatic event, you'll probably not only recall the event, but the emotions. I mean, all of the emotions come back. And it has to do with how the olfactory system is wired into the brain with the emotional centers that operate in the brain. So it has to do with that. So I would say that it's really one of the primitive and senses that we have that really allow you to recall the past in a dramatic kind of emotional way, more so than other senses, you know, more so than hearing or just, you know, I don't know. I mean, anything else.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's really important. I think people don't, I think most people really are aware of the importance of smell. It's not only survival, it really kind of tells us a lot about who we are. You know, all those memories that are stored that are linked to scents and things we've lived through, you know, kind of our sensory experiences. And yeah, so in my novel, in my book, so this is my first novel. It was published by HarperCollins. I worked for nearly a decade on this novel. I had to get all the science down, and it was very complicated to get the science down in a way that people would understand it and to spin a story, a love story around it. And it was really, when I think about it now, I don't think I'd be able to do it again. But here it is, you know, the paperback came out, the hardcover came out last year and the paperback came out last month.
The book is The DNA of You and Me. And it's not very often that we talk on this program on Cool Science Radio about, you know, something that is a work of fiction. But of course, we're speaking to you because of your background in science. And not only that, during this time, I think we're all reading more, we're staying at home, and we're wanting to pick up a good book. So The DNA of You and Me is that, but it's set in a laboratory situation. Tell us just briefly an overview of the story.
Yeah, sure. So it's about Emily Appel. She's the main character. She's looking back at her life. She's about to receive a prestigious award called Alaska Award for her research in the sense of smell. And she's looking back at her life and the period of time she spent in this very prestigious lab working alongside a colleague called Aiden. And this colleague was not only her competitor, but actually he ended up being kind of the love of her life. And really the story centers around that relationship and what she gave up or what she didn't give up and what happens, how the relationship evolves and what happens with the science and what happens with them at the end. So it spans 15 years of their lives. So it's a retrospect.
Yeah. Nice. I have to ask you this because I know you were born and raised in Venezuela, and one of my favorite books of all time is Love in the Time of Cholera. And there's something about Gabriel Garcia Marquez writing that conjures, well, the senses. I mean, he talks about smell and about, you know, taste and the colors. And I'm wondering to what degree your writing has been influenced by that sort of writing, or just having grown up in that atmosphere where those writers were the ones, you know, winning Pulitzer Prizes.
He's probably one of the first real novelists that I read. And I admired him so much. I mean, I still admire him. I just reread every one of his books. And Time of Cholera is probably one of my favorite books, Love in the Time of Cholera. And I don't really know. I mean, in terms of the impact he had, you know, this, I read it in Spanish. So in terms of the impact he had on my writing in English, it's so hard to tell. It's so hard to tell, you know, but those stories are all in my head, and that fantastic world, that magical world that he conjures on the page, it's just so stunning and beautiful and evocative of another time. I went to Colombia recently, a few months back, for the first time ever, and I was in Cartagena, and many of his stories, short stories, take place there, and I was able to see the town, which is stunning. So it was really nice to be there.
Wow, that sounds wonderful. I would love to think that someone like that influenced my writing in any way. And it's very interesting also what you say about the difference between reading it in Spanish and then writing in English. And I speak Spanish. Well, I'm actually working on it a lot more recently since we have a large Latinx population here in Park City, and we've been working to get out information to them, and so working on the Spanish. And it's so interesting that words that you see in Spanish sort of, you know, when they don't translate to English or vice versa, and you realize that Spanish has many more layers and depth of maybe ability to talk about things like smell and taste and the feelings that those conjure. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, I do agree with that.
Yeah, very interesting. Well, switching gears a little bit, I have to ask you about, I know that, you know, one of the symptoms of COVID-19 that people are talking about, like the first symptom that onsets when they know that something's not right, is that they lose their sense of smell and taste. Yes. And I know you've probably been asked about this as an olfactory scientist in recent days. What can you tell us about that?
Well, I've been following the story closely, and it's really, really interesting. And So what happens is this. I mean, you can lose your sense of smell in many ways. And one of them is head trauma. One of them is a very common one is what's called post-viral infection. And it results, it's kind of the aftermath of what happens after a virus comes into your nasal cavity and infects the lining of your nose. And basically your tissue is swollen. So that kind of has an impact on the olfactory neurons that are a little bit higher up in the nose. And as a result, they can't really bind efficiently to odorants. And then you feel your sense of smell impacted. You don't smell that well. As a result, you really don't taste. Because at the end of the day, flavor is entirely dependent on our sense of smell. It happens retronasally. So when I say you might be able to taste salt, sugar, bitter, and sour, but you're not going to really taste flavors or enjoy food. So this is what's being described as a symptom of COVID. Now, it could be that loss of smell is due to that, because many of the symptoms of COVID are flu-like symptoms. But what's really interesting is that actually there have been reports of patients who their only symptom is loss of smell. Their only symptom is that, and then they go and they get tested and they're positive for the virus. So that is very, very interesting. And we don't know yet why it's happening. Nobody knows. There's work from two labs, one in Geneva, one in Harvard, and they've come out with, their studies show that olfactory neurons really don't co-express the receptors that the virus needs to enter. So the virus is really not attacking the neurons directly, but the surrounding cells, the supporting cells. And those supporting cells, the neurons depend on those to survive. So when something happens to those, then the neurons are also impacted. So it's kind of affecting the sense of smell indirectly. And that's what's out there. But then other people, you know, in other labs come out with new pathways and new possibility, new receptors for the virus. So at this stage, you know, it's all up in the air. I mean, we really don't know. Yeah. We really don't know. But to me, the most interesting aspect of all of this are those reports of patients who their own are otherwise asymptomatic to the disease, other than the loss of smell. That's I think that's important.
Right. So many different ways that the symptoms are expressing themselves, you know, from respiratory to something like olfactory. It's, well, again, as if we know nothing else, it's that there's a lot that we don't know about COVID-19. And going back to your book, The DNA of You and Me, it's, you talk also in the book about DNA and about the DNA testing that goes on. And I think this is another really interesting topic to explore. And in fact, there have been several books recently written on this, that everything that is a byproduct of doing one of these popular DNA tests and what you find out about your family history, what you find out that may be a deep, dark family secret, or what you find out about yourself that sort of upends everything that you thought about yourself previously. And this happened to you. While you were born and raised in Venezuela, you had this Basque heritage from northern Spain. So tell us what happened to you.
That's so funny. So you're talking about 23andMe and Ancestry.com. And I'm kind of I'm like a mix of everything. So my mother is Venezuelan, my father is Jewish. I was raised secular, so I was raised in Venezuela. Then I came to live in the United States. I was actually born here in New York. My DNA is all over the place, probably. Now, in terms of the book, you know, what they're studying, what these scientists are studying, it's called The DNA of You and Me. And this is kind of a metaphor, the DNA of you and me, because there's competition in the lab, a lot of competition, and there's a race to find these genes, this fictional family of genes, which, you know, I kind of invented, that that are very important for the sense of smell, for neurons to connect in the brain to the olfactory bulb where smell is processed. So there's a race to discover this family of genes. And everybody wants to get there first. So that's one of the reasons why it's called the DNA of you and me. And the second reason is because, yeah, there's a lot of there's a lot of genome sequencing. There's actually even a sequence that I put out there in the book that codes for a gene that actually exists. So a lot of DNA in the book.
That's great. So one of the big challenges you had in writing the book is to filter down all of that scientific information, as you say, for the layperson, which is really what there's this whole body of people out there who are science writers who really do understand the science, but their biggest job, and I suppose challenge, is to deliver that on a platform that people can understand. Is your goal also to turn on your writers to science, or excuse me, turn on your readers to science by bringing it in this fictional tale?
Well, yes and no. I mean, I you know, the reason I really wrote this book and I invested so much time in the book, I mean, I was just, you know, I just love science and I love it. I loved it so much and I love it so much. I just wanted to render it, you know, in a story that everybody would read and everybody would love. And not so much for the science, but really what scientists go through, what it is to be a scientist, you know, the degree of commitment it takes, a really lifelong commitment and passion. And that's what I really wanted to depict.
Yes. And where does that leave you now? I think you've left your scientific research behind, at least for now. And then being a woman in a laboratory and being, I mean, I would assume there's competition there just like anywhere, but maybe it's more intense in the sciences.
I think there's competition everywhere probably. I mean, but it is intense in the sciences, and it's dramatic also. Why? Because in the sciences, those years, the kind of the peak years in which you really have to be in the lab and you have to be doing research and publishing, usually coincide with the reproductive window in a woman's life, and that's where, you know, all kinds of problems come into play, because many women decide to leave science at that point. You know, they decide that it's better to just, you know, have children and maybe opt for another career, maybe within the sciences, but not doing research, which is really extremely time consuming.
Well, writing a novel is time consuming too, as you've just expressed, but it must be very satisfying.
It is. It's very satisfying. And you can do it on your own time. You know, you don't have to be in the lab 24/7. You can do it from home also, which is also great.
Right. Yeah. Especially the book is The DNA of You and Me. My guest is Andrea Rothman. And I just want to thank you very much for joining us this morning on Cool Science Radio. It's great to speak with you.
Me too. Thank you.
Thanks, Andrea.